Hi, this is filmmaker BJ Colangelo, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Gigi Chick, presented by Above Below Entertainment. To the default setting, where we find out what makes you tick, because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm co-host Gigi Chick.
And today, our guest is, I'm sure, going to be a shock to all of you when I tell you, a comedian friend of mine, Mr. Joey, is it Gentile?
Gentile.
Oh, my stars. I've been saying Gentile this
That's
whole time,
how I was saying in my head.
Which I'm sure is not a rarity for you, but...
No, and it's honestly like the best way someone could say it, because I've had it way butchered.
Oh, really?
Just think of Jennifer Tilly,
Gentile. Yeah. I'm never going to forget that now, unless I'm wasted or high, which is what's happening right now here at the set of the default setting. Joey's default setting is sarcasm, which... I love all of my friends. I love all the people that have been on this podcast recently, but there have been a lot of like sad default settings, which we've made the best of and made happy. Mm-hmm. Sarcasm's fun, and I'm happy to talk about this. So when you say sarcasm's your default setting, like, did you grow up a sarcastic child?
I grew up a sad child. No, I grew up a very... I had to grow up early, put it that way. Like, I've been on my own since I was 16, so sarcasm I didn't learn to teach myself how to use until I was on my own.
Okay.
It was not like, I was not a sarcastic kid. I really kind of was a sad kid. Like, you'd look at me and be like, oh, I don't know if
Puppy
I should dog. Donate money or...
In the arms right? of the angels.
Sarah McLachlan, right? No. So it was something I taught myself way later on in life. How to deal.
And is it like a sort of like a deflection like mechanism? Like a...
Yeah, like coping?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So you remember that saying like we were all taught growing up, like don't let people laugh at you, laugh at yourself and join them. Like you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. don't let them make fun of you, make fun of yourself and then laugh with them type
yeah,
deal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was me.
Okay.
So that's, you know, that's eventually what led me down the road to comedy, which was like, hey, you already know you look ridiculous. Let's point it out and make some jokes out of it. So that's kind of where the sarcasm thing came in.
Okay. Yeah. So growing, like, I guess your initial before you were kind of out on your own, would you say it was almost the opposite where you're more earnest and more like sort of, I don't know, very romantic about things?
No, I was very rebellious in a way. Okay. Both my parents were Cleveland cops.
Oh, wow.
So actually, my stepdad was a sergeant for Cleveland. He still is. My mom was a patrolman. She retired in 2004 when my youngest sister was born.
Okay.
So I was very rebellious. Like, okay. And that still kind of comes over till today. Like, oh, don't, Joey, don't do this. Fuck you. Watch me do it.
Okay.
That's so, yeah. I was a very rebellious, sad child. It was
that's
fun.
An intense environment to grow
bit,
up in, though.
A little bit. And it was weird, too, because it was not like... I kind of make the joke like I've never been arrested, which I haven't, but I've been handcuffed because I was so out of control as a kid.
Is that a nice thing about like being a cop parent is you can just be like, all right, that's it. And like, I mean, I'm wondering how kosher
it's
that
like
really
time
is.
Out involves yeah, handcuffs. Like
you can it's just, literally.
Yeah, yeah like you just throw your kids out. In the back of a car and like right. make them sit back there.
Get in the cage.
Yeah. 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 Put them in the drunk tank.
Yeah.
Drunk tape. I would have appreciated a drunk tape more than
it's basically like an episode of what's it called? The Andy Griffith Show. They just lock you up in a cell overnight. Think about what you've done, young man. Hey, but here's a steaming hot dinner.
Barney Fife.
Barney Fife.
Yeah, my stepdad was way more tough than Barney Fife.
Okay, so he was like a fucking like stud horse.
No, I wouldn't say stud. But looking back at it, like I, you know, my mom was a single mom for 10 years.
Okay.
And then I never knew my dad. I met him once in 98. I was like in the first grade. Came over for a weekend.
You're
a
Wannell. Sorry. At
92. I'll actually be 26 in 3 days.
No, so. He's Wannell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. That makes him the youngest person on the podcast. Yeah, that's a rarity. She's usually the baby, and then we yell at her for being the baby.
Well, now you can yell at me.
She can't help when she was born, and we're like, fuck you, Gigi. The whole time, she can't help it.
Yeah, it was so like my mom was a single mom for 10 years and then they got married in 02. Okay. And for me, when you go from like being the only kid and the only guy really in your mom's life, at that young age, you like learn to hate that other person.
Sure.
So I was like, I was a dick. Don't get me wrong.
To
like
your stepdad?
Yes. Okay. I can look back at that and I was like, oh my God, I was an asshole.
Were you rebellious or a dick at all before the stepdad came on the scene? Okay. So it was when the stepdad entered where you were like, what the fuck are you? Who's this guy? What are you trying to pull?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was... looking back at it, again, I can be like, wow, dude, like you were an asshole. But the... it just kind of developed from there. And then as I got older, I learned to appreciate him more and like do all this stuff. But it's weird because I haven't talked to my mom in 4 years because we actually had a huge, huge falling out. Mm-hmm. So I haven't seen him or my sisters in 4 years. The sisters things kill, you know, that they kill me. I'm 10 and 12 years older than they are.
Oh, okay. So they were the children of your stepdad and your mom's marriage.
And my mom.
Marriage.
Gotcha. But yeah, I mean, what was the question? I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. This is what happens all the time. So we were talking about how like you started out and you were very like sad and very like, you were actually pretty like, I would say somewhat like pacifist a little bit before your stepdad entered on the scene. I mean, you were pretty peaceful. You didn't really ruffle any feathers. Yeah. You were pretty just like,
oh, I ruffled too many feathers.
But then once your stepdad came on, and did that carry over into other elements like in school and shit like that? Or was it mostly just directed at him?
No. It was definitely school too. I hated school. I hate school in general.
Okay.
Specifically I can say seventh grade year, I went to Our Lady of Angels over on Rocky River Drive.
Okay.
That was my favorite year of school ever. Cause I just remember actually being a lot of fun.
Okay.
But I'm not like one of those people, like I didn't go to college because of the fact, like, don't put me at a table. I can't learn that way.
Okay.
Put me out in the field. Let me do something. Let me be hands on.
That's so funny because already just everything that you're saying reminds me so much of my brother and brothers.
Really?
Yeah. It's crazy. And then even just that, like they're just like that. They don't learn conventionally, but they're both like really intelligent guys.
Yeah. It was the same way though. Like I remember like French was one of my favorite things to learn in the world, in school. And
voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?
You do know the English.
Yes. Can we go to bed with me?
Yeah,
that's why we just sang it. Yeah.
We're going to have a three-way after this episode's over.
I thought we were
about
to start like dragging out and I had to get like my crazy Christina hair. That's what this hair is right now.
Well, because that's the only like full-on French sentence I actually know. Like I know some French. And I actually, like if we'd been given French as an option in school, I would have totally learned that. Mm-hmm. I'm glad I didn't because it's dying as a language and
it's
I ended
so
up
sad.
Having to learn
it's
Spanish.
Beautiful.
But I love French. Yeah. I love going to France. I love
I'm actually
it.
Relearning it.
Nice. Well, the thing about learning it was my teacher, she was married to a Frenchman. She lived in France for years. I got to learn outside of the classroom with her and her husband. And so it was very hands-on. So like, it drew me in on how to learn. But even school, I was super rebellious and I...
So you were rebellious even when you were having a good time that first year of being in that Rocky River school and learning French and all that kind of stuff. So how were you rebellious?
Well, I would get detentions for like the dumbest shit. Like I'm not even kidding. When
was it a private school?
Catholic private school.
That's how private schools are. I had an in-school suspension when I had never gotten in trouble
before.
What the
fuck? Can you please? I know I've heard this, but what is in-school suspension? Can someone?
It's literally where you go into a room and pretty much you have a babysitter and you have to just write reports all day without
talking. After school?
No, during school.
During school. Yeah. Okay. So you have to be isolated away from everyone
else.
Right,
and suddenly are you missing all your subjects and then have to go back to it to like
catch yourself
up. Yeah,
that's helpful. That's productive as a student.
Right,
yeah,
right.
That's great.
Nothing says like, here's a lesson you need to learn by like missing all of your actual lessons.
Exactly.
Having to play catch up and being behind. Yeah, that's great. Do they still do those? Does anybody know? Is that like
a lot? I'm sure they do.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Like, I mean, in between teaching,
I mean, they
don't
know
how to fight back against.
you can't hit children anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't spank anymore. Like
if they did, maybe they'd shoot people less. All right, sorry. I just
my mom and her sisters, the stories that they tell, it's crazy.
Yeah. What about the
because they all grew up in Catholic school.
Oh, yeah, my mom, too. She talked about how they got hit with rulers. They got locked in closets. And
the chokey?
Yeah. Wait, what was that?
The chokey.
What was that?
Matilda. The chokey.
I don't know what that is.
You've never seen Matilda?
No, I'm sorry. I don't know. So something you will learn about me is, first of all, I'm 400 years old. And also, I grew up in the country. So we had no culture. There was nothing.
I'm going to watch this with you. And yeah, I'm so excited.
Okay, wait. So Matilda, was there like a movie with the girl from Mrs. Doubtfire that's like really good on Twitter now? Okay, see, I have some association with who that is.
Mara Wilson.
Yes, yeah. Mara Wilson. Yes. I love her. She favorited one of my tweets the other day and I almost fell out of my chair.
Shut up.
I know, right? She favorited one of my tweets and I was like, well, my year is made. I don't have to worry about anything else the rest of the year.
God, and I thought Michelle Visage liking one of my tweets was huge.
I know.
I don't have anything like
but
that.
But then I feel like such a phony because I'm like, I don't know what Matilda is. Okay. And she liked one of my tweets.
But I feel like that's like saying like I've never seen Willy Wonka.
Guys are like 10 years younger than me. So that's probably where the disconnect is.
I have such a good emotional tie to the movie Matilda because my dad worked for the Cleveland Orchestra growing up. Mm-hmm. And I just like, it was so much fun for us too. We were constantly at Severance Hall interacting with these like amazing musicians. And he was the personal assistant chauffeur / just life person to the conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra, Christoph von Dohnányi. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up in like just this fun environment. And like one of the orchestra members gave my brothers and I the movie Matilda for like Christmas one year or something.
That's so great.
And it was just like one of the sweet gifts they would give us. And we were like just obsessed with it. And ever since then, I just have such like warm feelings about
it. So what's the chokey?
Okay, so the chokey, first of all, you have to understand the principle.
Okay.
Which she is like an Olympic field reject, pretty much. And her name is the Trunchbull. And
Miss
she Trunchbull. Wears.
Yeah.
This is a character.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Gotcha. And when I say like her name should be like Olga.
Yeah.
And from like Serbia. Like just that's the yeah. picture.
I'm picturing. Yeah.
So she's just this horrible woman and for some reason gets away with murder. And she's got this thing called the chokey, which is this closet that has spikes on the walls.
It's like a drippy old it's like a
that
jagged
sounds like an
closet.
S&M or like torture thing. Right. Yeah, okay.
But it's called the chokey and it's infamous from all the children that if you misbehave, the Trunchbull is going to put you in the chokey.
Shit.
Which he's not going to get this reference, but regarding Matilda, every time I make pancakes, that's all I think too. About is that song.
I hope everyone listening to this right now who's seen Matilda is thoroughly enjoying this exchange.
Oh my God. She made
this is all I care about. No, this is all I care about. I just want my listeners to be happy. I don't give a fuck.
I can only strive for as perfect of pancakes as she makes in the movie.
I'm going to like four? in the bio for this episode, I'll be like, hey, Matilda fans! Tune into this episode!
You should tweet this to Mara Wilson since you're friends now.
I should. That's a great
Please
point.
Please do.
Yes.
Well, no, I literally almost peed in my pants because I know she's hilarious and I need to start following
and
her.
And her Twitter handle now is like, Mara, get rid of
Isn't
Nazis
Isn't that great? Yeah, get rid
Wilson.
Of Nazis Wilson. Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Like she, well, and the thing is, so I follow so many female, I don't even know if they're female comics. They're not even necessarily comic writers, but like they have between 10 and 30,000 followers and they're fucking hysterical, just women on Twitter. And that's where I get so much like inspiration to like write my shit.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing that I love about at least women on Twitter is that they, I don't know, my experience with like a lot of women in comedy, here we go, comedy, going down that Woo-hoo. Rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my experience with women in comedy is that I've never seen a lot of women become really super goofy or do things that are really like alt-ish. Like I had Ginger Moore on a couple weeks ago. She's amazing. And she was telling me about like her whole like, what was her thing? George Marlin. Like she dressed up as a fish comic and she did like this whole thing. And I was like, I just heard Dreamweaver as she was talking. I was like, Dreamweaver.
Yeah, you were like, you did what?
I actually just met her a couple weeks ago. Actually, no, about a month or so ago.
Ugh.
We did a show together at the Funny Stop. And
yeah.
I never met her before. And she got up on stage and I was dying.
Yes.
She's
just awesome.
Like balls to the wall. Like,
yeah.
But then you meet her and she's so like demure.
Yes.
And
she's
nice
so meek.
She's so collected. Yes. And,
well, and it's like, if I knew she wasn't like dating Bob Kenner. So I found out she's dating Bob. I didn't actually know that when we interviewed her on the podcast.
Yeah, I didn't
And
know
then
that.
She roasted Bob Surprise. That night and their whole roast was about like, your semen tastes so terrible. And I was
oh
like,
my
oh my God.
God,
they're dating. Holy shit. Which I ship the shit out of that. They're completely adorable together. But Bob is also like 3% body fat. So I know I could never like fight him for asshole. Her hand because like he would fucking murder me.
You're my nemesis, Bob.
But that's it. Like I love women who can do like really, and that's the thing on Twitter, like, and like Mara Wilson's one of them. They just do really goofy, like off the wall shit. It's not like, it's not about like specific women shit. It's the kind of stuff that men have been doing for eons. And it's still,
exactly.
That's what I love.
If you like her, and I'm going to give her a shout out really quick, because I will send this to her, is follow Quinn Cummings.
Okay.
She was a child actress.
Is it at Quinn Cummings? I'm sorry.
Yes. It's at Quincy One, I think, is her handle.
Okay.
But she was actually a child actor who at, I think, 10 was nominated for an Oscar.
Okay.
And for The Goodbye Girl way back in the 70s.
Okay.
And she kind of resurfaced in the past 10 years, wrote 2 books, is like, she's pretty much the grown up version of Mara Wilson.
Okay.
And I got to know her a little bit, and she's one of the coolest people in the world. And if you like Mara Wilson's tweets, like currently Quinn's thing is, you know, like this whole Russia colluding thing.
Yeah, yeah.
She's responding to all these haters in Russian. And it's just pretty much like,
she speaks Russian?
You know, no. But if you look at the tweets, like all the tweets in Russian say the same thing.
Okay.
So it's pretty much like, go figure this the fuck out since you love your Russian colluder. And she is hilarious. And I highly recommend Quinn Cummings.
You know what makes me happy?
Yeah, that's her.
She's pretty.
So that little girl, that's her when she was like 10.
She looks really familiar.
Nominated for an Oscar.
Oh, yeah. She does look really familiar.
Yeah, The Goodbye Girl. It was Richard Dreyfuss and Marsha Mason. It was a Neil
Simon
movie.
It sounds familiar. I should probably add that to my list.
But she's fantastic.
Awesome.
So, what the fuck was I going to say?
So basically.
No, you go.
Oh, so I was just going to go back to. So even in school, you were constantly acting out.
Yeah.
You didn't get put in the chokey, thank God.
No, no. I remember what I was going to tell the story on was I once got a detention for going behind the teacher's desk and taking Triscuit crackers from, I mean, this is that.
You still like Triscuits?
I love Triscuits.
Mm, controversial.
Why?
No, I'm sure it's fine. I've never liked them and I feel like I'm doing Triscuits wrong.
Think about Triscuits though. They're just really, really thin shredded wheat cereals.
That's why. Because my brain goes, wait, this should be sweet. Why is it salty? What the fuck is going on? I'm not eating a Triscuit right now. I'm eating rolled gold.
They give me cotton mouth, so I like stay away.
Should we stop eating them?
It's like when I eat them, I'm just like.
Wait. So, you don't eat them anymore because
not really. Just because I just don't like how dry they make
in general. Or
no, shredded wheat cereal.
Okay,
frosted
that's fine.
Shredded wheat.
Oh my
let's
God.
Be for real.
Frosted
minis.
Mm, the blueberry ones.
Oh,
girl.
Brown sugar ones too. Brown sugar.
Yes, please. Okay, yeah. So those, but the Triscuits specifically, even if I like load a bunch of like toppings on them, mm-hmm. like make it a little tapas night, no.
No? They,
it's just like.
Because Jeremy, who's going to be on the show later, he was talking about like the first podcast I ever did was Let the Hate Flow with him and Jordan. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Triscuits. I don't even remember how we started talking about it. But I was like, man, fuck Triscuits. And he's like, wait, you need to top them though. Like you need to put cheese and meat and shit on it, which I've never done. So maybe that's what I'm messing mm-hmm. as far as.
Like I'm way more obsessed with wheat thins. Like those to me have a good taste. I could eat an entire box if I let myself.
I don't hate them, but I feel like they're missing that Triscuity.
The texture.
They're missing that like body.
That extra like little pep in their step.
But-
All right. So you were trying to steal a Triscuit from the
I was helping out a friend who was hungry. It was his Triscuit. Box first Aww. Of all, let me just say, Joe Fasco, go fuck yourself for making me do it. Second of all,
shout out.
Right? He won't hear this. This fucker doesn't even have a Facebook. I'm pretty sure he's still
grid.
On MySpace.
He's hiding from you,
right? No, but yeah. And so the teacher left. We were going to gym class and he's like, get me some of those. I'm so hungry. I'm like, get them yourself. He's like, no, just get them. I'm like, okay, whatever. I don't know. He must have gone to tell the teacher because at that exact moment, the teacher came back and was like, what are you doing? And all of a sudden, I next thing I knew, I was in the principal's office for stealing teacher property. I'm like, this is his property. God damn it.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I mean, but even like the dumbest shit, like I was always doing just dumb shit. Allegedly,
you're always in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Right. Well, no, I mean, even stuff too, like, allegedly my, okay. So I went to Holy Name freshman year, John Marshall sophomore, junior year. And then senior year, I moved to Seattle. So when people ask me like where I went to high school, I went to the high school of
all
America.
All over the place.
Literally.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And allegedly, junior year, I may have slept with the, one of my student teachers. And then also too.
This is a story that that has happened more than once on this show.
I was just thinking that. Like,
sleeping with the student teacher. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's super common.
Yeah.
Super common.
It's actually quite common. Yes.
Apparently. Yeah. We're figuring that out.
Right. And like, I know when I was in school, you had to do 3 years of math, 3 years of history, 3 years of science. The only thing you were required to do 4 years of was English. I think it's different now. I think it's 4 years for everything except for history.
Okay.
Which out of all things, it's like, really?
The irony. But it does explain how we got here. No it does shit. Explain how we got here.
No shit. So I was like, I hate it. I've always hated math. I don't like maths at all.
Me
like,
neither.
I hate
math
too.
I am not Caddy Heron. I don't fucking care.
Fuck math.
No shit.
I don't care that it makes my clothes and my food, but fuck math. Seriously,
right,
fuck
right.
math.
Junior yeah. year, I had to pay. I was that kid too. I went before, after school, had tutors, still failing, trying. I had to pay my Algebra 2 teacher $100 to pass me. So I was always doing shit that was not supposed to be in the norm. So that was always there, school or not school.
That's so insane.
Ah, boozy booze.
Ow, ow.
Donka.
So you were paying them, not blowing them for the...
Both. I was paying and blowing.
Excellent. Well, I feel like if you should do one, you shouldn't have to do the other. But what do I know?
I mean,
yeah,
you weren't doing one very well.
Shouldn't they technically have paid you?
Yeah. No, separate teacher.
Okay. That makes way more sense. Well, you were doing what it took. You were paying. You were doing what you needed to do.
I'm an independent woman who needs to pass his own fucking grades and do whatever.
The American dream.
Right? So, okay. So you would do things like steal shit from teachers. What were the other infractions?
Well, I mean... So, again, I've never been arrested, but, you know, I was put in handcuffs out of, like, punishment and all this stuff. I never really got into drugs until I was later on my own, kind of like when I moved to L.A. and really kind of on my own. And but I would smoke weed and stuff and tried that. And I remember actually my first time I've ever smoked weed was my friends had this bong and they used Hawaiian Punch's bong water.
This is the second time that someone has told me the first. So last week we literally had someone talk about their default setting being stoned. Mm-hmm. And they said they used a bong. And I was like, that is nuts. That's like the easiest one. Like, right. So they used Hawaiian
Punch.
Punch as Hawaiian the punch. Bong water.
Which
I didn't know you
it.
Could do that.
Flavors
that
it.
Sounds amazing.
You're welcome.
Oh my God.
Hawaiian
All right. Yes. Punch. Please remind me to tell my stoner boyfriend on the way home tonight.
You got it.
That because yes. he has, I don't actually even know if he has bongs. He has like those crazy contraptions that look like fucking like meth. Like they're like flasks with like Bunsen things sticking out of them.
Who has a Bunsen burner?
Well, and I was telling the story last week. Carmen Morales, she's this really funny comedian. She has this whole bit about how like the whole reason she smokes weed is so she doesn't have to fuck with contraptions. Mm. And he has like all the fucking contraptions. So, but now I really want him just to get a standard bong so we can try Hawaiian Punch.
Oh,
so
it.
was it good? Like, I'm assuming it was heaven.
I mean, it was very flavorful, put it that way. But I don't know if I was the only one. The first time I ever smoked weed, I didn't get high.
No, I smoked weed 12 times before I got high.
Okay, yeah.
I think that's pretty common, actually.
I remember like sitting there being like, okay, my mouth just tastes like really crusty Hawaiian Punch. Like, that's all I...
Dried up Hawaiian Punch.
Yes. So, no, I mean, it was good, but like, so yeah, so I was doing all these things. I never was caught, but the sarcasm thing came in kind of after I moved to Seattle at 17.
Now, is your senior year?
It's my senior year, yeah.
Okay.
I moved to Seattle and then kind of like when I came back because I lived the West Coast life for a year and like... Found myself. Exactly. Because I feel like 16 through 21 kind of really shape you to be the adult you become. Those are like the big
I'm like the exception, but yes, go on.
So I was like, I had this whole new look on life. I was like, fuck the man and yada, yada, yada. And you don't have to work for the man and fuck... All this shit. I just don't want to keep saying the man, but...
The man!
That's just
No, me. Seriously, fuck the man.
That's just my faggotry.
If we can have, like, a sponsor that's called Fuck the Man, I would talk about it for 5 minutes.
Yeah, so it was all this stuff, and then I came back and kind of was set from West Coaster back into, like, the Ohio lifestyle, and was like, all right, I'm going to have to figure out a way to deal with all of this, and sarcasm became it.
So, do you find that when you came back, so how long ago did you come back?
So I moved back from Los Angeles right after I turned 20.
So you've been back about 6 years?
6 years, okay. Yeah.
Because I remember the first time I ever met you was at LVT, actually.
My first night doing Cleveland stand-up.
Ah, was it really? That I got was. To see you the first time ever. That makes me so happy. I always love telling the origin story of like how I met my comedian friends I have on the podcast. So the first time I ever saw him, you had on a Bomba shirt. And
yes, yeah, I was working there at that time.
And you're at LVT, and you talked about how you're from LA, and I was like, fuck, people are coming up in here from LA. And I I was like, I didn't even know if I could approach you. I thought you were like on another level. So
no, well, the funniest thing about the LA thing was I, you know, that night at LVT was the first night that I had done comedy here.
He was really good, by the way.
What's up?
I said he was really good, by the way. Not everybody's good on their first. Well,
that's actually, I didn't want to sound super narcissistic, but I was going to bring that up here in a second because, okay, so before I learned how to use sarcasm in my life, telling a story, I was like the worst at. So it amazes me doing comedy for however long it's been now that I'm able to like get stories and get the jokes and get the punchline out there. Because when my first time doing comedy ever was at the Laugh Factory in LA.
What?
The first time I ever hit a stage. What? But the thing was, it wasn't like I tried out and was like going to do this. Because usually with Laugh Factory, for people that don't know, I just belch.
You don't understand. We belch openly into the mic here, so I won't judge you. I'll encourage it. I'll be like, yes! Yes!
Burp that Sicilian blood orange.
Support it.
No, yeah, so it was, like, a friend of mine was hosting, and so for the Laugh Factory, you need to do, like, a 10 or 5 or 10 minute set that's clean.
How does it work? Is it open, or do you actually get...
It's open, but then you get so far, and then you get invited.
Okay, so, wait, so you start out... I'm sorry, I really want to understand.
No. So, my friend was hosting the show, and a comedian dropped out, and my apartment in LA was on the Sunset Strip, right next to the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
And he texted me, and he's like, hey... Do you want to do this? I'm like, huh?
And it was a 5 minute?
And it was a 5 minute set. I had nothing planned. I bombed horribly.
First time ever at fucking Laugh Factory. Right. If you did any better than that, I'd be like, get out of here, Seinfeld. Go get the fuck.
I didn't touch it for years. And then the night that I met you at LVT, the first night, I had nothing written.
I
literally was at work. I was like, I really want to start doing comedy. Like, what do I do? I found out that LVT was happening. I took an Uber from work to LVT, got on stage. First night... had people like giving me a standing ovation. I'm like, okay, something I'm doing right
so
here.
Good.
It was
so good.
Oh my God. Because he's
like, I'm from LA.
Set.
And I'm like, obviously you are because you're really fucking funny. And like I said, when people tell me they're from LA and they're at LVT, I'm like, oh, they're in town for something.
Yeah.
Like they're here to LVT. Feature for like fucking John Mulhaney.
Is it LVT that when that's like a really tough crowd normally?
Well, you've been with me a couple of times.
It's all comics.
So what I love, I was actually going to make this one of my Facebook statuses this week is like, what do you expect? The crowd was full of comics. And that's what I get either when I bomb or when I kill.
Yeah.
Every fucking time.
Yeah. It should not work that way.
It's a fucking crowd of comics, so you can't really expect anything else.
Well, the funniest thing about that was, so I go on stage. I have nothing planned. Everything that I did was pulled out of my ass. I was told I had 5 minutes. I'm pretty sure I went 10 minutes.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
And like, yeah,
Bob doesn't pay attention. Yeah. So. It's Bob. I love you, Bob. If you're listening, I love you so much.
I love his panda hat that he's been wearing.
Bob's great.
And so Tabitha Jones, who's one of my favorite people in the world.
She's great. She was our first guest ever on the podcast.
I was so excited.
She's so good.
She messaged me. She took me under her wing and she's like, this is what you do here. Come here, come here. Which I love and I'm super grateful for. And she's like, why don't you come in tomorrow at, what is that German place that they do? The Stockenheim or whatever?
Sachsenheim. Yeah, Sachsenheim. Jeremy runs that. Yeah, yes. Jeremy runs that.
So the very next night, I go to the Sachsenheim.
Yes.
I go there. I do the same exact set.
Bomb.
Nothing.
Because there's nobody in there.
Because there's nobody
there's
there.
There's three people.
And I was like, maybe I wasn't that good. And Tabitha's like,
it's
that's
the
just,
Sachsenheim. Yeah. Yep. Nope. I totally agree. So, all right. So when you first started to suspect that like comedy was up your alley, was it in relation to sort of the sarcasm deflection thing or?
A little bit because what I would do is that I would take everyday things in my life and post it on Facebook and people would be like, you're really funny.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, thank you.
Yeah.
Like, cause I wasn't that, like, again, I wasn't that funny kid growing up. I couldn't tell a story. I couldn't deliver a punchline. I have to burp again.
Do it. Yeah.
First man burp we've had.
Woo.
That's our first man burp. You had the inaugural man burp on this podcast. Ow. You're like fucking Neil Armstrong.
There was some serious bass
on the
to
default
it. It was
awesome.
It's the fucking sparkling, like,
yeah, if you guys want more, there's
drinking.
More in the fridge. Just let me know when you want me to get you another.
But yeah, so it's funny too, because living in LA, you meet all these industry people. And so I have friends on Facebook and friends in general who are like agents and directors and actors and stuff. And they would be like, you're really, really funny. I'm like, thanks, pay me now. And no, I'm like, okay, so what do we do? And I'm like, okay, comedy would be a really, really good outlet.
Mm.
And so I was taking these things in everyday life and just putting them in front of a microphone. And
yeah.
I mean, you can definitely, when you get that first laugh, it's such a high. It's such a good high. And like, you know, you're doing something well. Because for me, I'm always nervous. And I've been doing this for a while. I'm always nervous before I hit the stage. Mm-hmm. And I can't not be nervous because I know I'm going to bomb. Like, I have to play off that negative energy.
I thought of this today. So I'm probably never going to have kids. I'm probably never going to be a parent.
Me neither.
But I officially understand it because comedy makes me broke and tired. And it is an alcoholic. Yep. And it ages me rapidly. It's probably not very safe for me to do for a lot of reasons. It's ravaging my body. It's expensive. But it's so worth it when you make them happy.
Because that's so what my
parents,
nice.
That's what all my friends who are parents are like, but when you make them happy, it's so worth it. When they love you, it's so worth it. And that is fucking comedy, 100%.
I feel like I would like literally get addicted to it. Like, I mean, that's assuming. That's assuming anyone would laugh at anything I said. I would probably get addicted
to it. Well, there are days. Well, okay. So I know we'll get into later. I'm taking a break from comedy for a while because I'm focusing all my energy on this project and I'm already scratching like to get on a stage and you get addicted to it because when you get that first laugh, the audience is putty in your hands and it's like, okay, let me fuck with you. Let me see what I can do. And when you have a microphone in front of you, you are in control of the entire room and it's the power of that gets you addicted.
Yeah. And it's weird because I've always like wondered about comedy and even when I was a kid, like my aunts and uncles were like, you're going to be an actress. You're going to be on the radio. You're going to be a comedian. Like they said all of these like crazy things and I was like, what? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just feel like I don't really have a very like narcissistic like personality at all.
That's why you probably won't ever
And like I don't like necessarily like attention being on me, but I actually enjoy making people laugh. Yeah. Like to me, I would get high off of that because it's like just literally enjoyable. Like looking at people or hearing people laugh at something that I said is like so fun to me. And I do that in like friend groups.
Yeah.
Like when I'm just, I'll go on this rant about my day or like something that happened and people are all of a sudden I'll like zone out of it and everyone's just like,
that's it. Like, so when like she and I get together, like I'm the stand-up comedian, but she makes people laugh way harder when we're in groups of people than I do. Because I don't know if you're just great at storytelling. I don't know if it's just like there's something about like your expressiveness.
Well, I know I'm very expressive and that's also something I've been told my whole life. But I don't know. And that doesn't always translate to a stage. I mean, doing stand-up is so hard.
It's
like it's not the same as just like telling a random story to your friends, but I don't know. I think it'd be fun to try.
And that's
least.
What so many people say is that like, I know I'm funny, but I'm not stand-up funny. And that is a very different thing. And if you have that ability to realize that, you're ahead of the game. Because so many people.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't stop me from trying at least. Like, even if I bombed, I've gone to see like Jess perform so many times. I've seen stand-up.
You've seen me bomb, you've seen other people bomb.
I've seen what it looks like. And I know the reasons why people bomb. And so if I did bomb, I wouldn't like take it to heart.
Yes, exactly.
It's just kind of like.
Because the thing is, you have an awareness because you haven't done stand-up yet that like you're like, I don't know if I'm stand-up funny. I just know that I'm funny. So many stand-up comics that like Joey and I see, quote unquote stand-up comics, are like, they're not funny, period. And they just go up and are like, waka waka. And no one has the heart to tell them. Or if someone does have the heart, can she get in?
Yeah, she's Natalie's here.
Hi, Natalie.
Hello.
Make yourself comfortable.
Yeah, please do. There's Brutus somewhere around here.
Yeah,
little Brutus.
Oh, that's Cuddle Brutus. With Brutus.
So we don't have the heart to tell them. Or if you do have the heart to say like,
I don't give a shit.
Maybe
I'll
this isn't for you. But see, they're also in that mindset of like, no one can tell me no. And like, they have to see it for themselves.
Yeah, here's the thing. For sure.
And this is, again, this is where I pull in sarcasm. I'm an asshole. I have no problem telling
me though. I'm just saying.
I have no problem telling people this is what you need to work on. This is what you did really, really well. Because I would appreciate the honesty back if something went wrong.
So you're not someone who can dish it but can't take it. Like you're expecting no, that completely. Reciprocity.
Like I want you to let me know if you like something, what needs to be worked on, yada yada yada.
Okay.
Because here I have three things when it comes to quote unquote this industry.
Okay.
Number one, I'm not afraid to drop names or not afraid to name names.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck. Number two, criticism, whether it is negative or positive, works both ways.
Yeah.
And number three, if you don't have fucking fun while doing it, yeah. don't fucking do it.
Yeah.
Well, and so my experience has been everything that I've done in my life mm-hmm. prior to this, and it could just be like who I am at this mm-hmm. point in my life, but everything that I've done prior to it, I've never, if I've not been good at it right away, I'm like, fuck it, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. However, there's shit that I was, you know, I've been good. I was good at this. The first time I ever did it, I actually did really well at the improv. I did an improv set. Nice. It was like a workshop thing and I did really well.
Oh yeah, that was awesome. It was so fun for me to see because I got to see I got to know Jess like pre-comedy and pursuing her dreams and then after, and I was just like a proud mama, like, oh my God, comedy.
But comedy is one of those things that it's the only thing in my life that even when I have the worst nights and I feel like I just got stabbed in the neck, I'm like, I'm going to go do this all over again the very next day. And I can't stop myself. Yeah.
Well, it's like actors. So you will have 20 auditions and people tell you 19 and a half out of those 20 that you're really bad or you don't fit. You're too thin. You're too fat. You're too short. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're too this, this, and that. But you get up and you go again, because for every 19 and a half, you'll get 0.1%. That's okay, you did really good. And then you just build from that.
They give you a little seed of hope, just have to keep building on it.
Whether you're trying to get in the music industry, whether you're trying to act, whether you're trying to do comedy, you're going to have people tell you no all the time. And there's going to be that one person that'll just pull you through. And then you have to keep building off of that. And it's a challenge.
Oh, yeah.
The challenge.
I can't think of any specific examples off the top of my head, but I feel like I've heard so many. Just even in the sense of of famous actors and actresses who are oh my God, I was constantly turned down.
Yeah.
And then this one person was no, you're fucking amazing. Yeah. And that's how you know me, even know who I am. It's that was their introduction into that business. That was their shot kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you can't really listen to the majority all the time.
No, you can't. And obviously the majority for certain things no one listens to anyway.
Well, that's the thing we were talking about earlier, where it's there are all these comedians that think that they're hilarious. And if you tell them no, they're much of I don't have to listen to you. Who are you? And to their point, if you did listen to everyone who told you you were shit, you'd never get anything done. Yeah. But
you have to have a thick skin.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why
I don't really.
That's why I can't stand when people don't. Criticize. Good criticism and bad criticism help you out.
Yeah.
I think I would want someone to tell me what I should improve. To me, this is how I am in every aspect of my life. Mm-hmm. I'm super sensitive, but people, you could come and tell me anything, mm-hmm. even if it's very harsh. It's to me, it's the delivery. Yeah. If someone came up to me and was no, that sucked. You needed to do this, this, and this. You were super fucking awkward when you did this. I'd be oh my God. And I would take that to heart. But if someone was I think you should try doing this mm-hmm. because the audience reacted when you did that, mm-hmm. it's to me, it's all about delivery, but that's comedy as well, I guess.
For sure.
So give us an example of when you started noticing that you became a sarcastic person.
Probably at work.
Okay.
Because, seriously, for the longest time to pay bills, I've been a bartender. And there's been a certain point as a bartender, or if you've ever worked in the service industry in general, when you're dealing with people in front of the house, where you just don't give a shit. So I remember shaking. I remember making a Cosmopolitan for this lady. And I was the bartender at Light Bistro in Ohio City, which is no longer there. It's where the Black Pig is now.
Yes.
And I made, Cosmos are meant to be pink. It's their signature thing.
They have grenadine?
No, it's cranberry.
Okay.
And I made it. It was my Cosmos are always super pink. And I gave it to her and she's she drinks it. And, she's can you add a little bit more cranberry? I'm like, sure. I add more cranberry. At this point, it's seriously it's neon. That's how pink it is. And she's like, I need more cranberry. I remember taking the glass. I said, lady, if I give you any more cranberry, it's going to clear your UTI. I can't stand it. People, that's how I started noticing I was super
sarcastic.
Were you
heavy handed as a bartender? Is that something that anyone ever told you?
Heavy handed?
With liquor.
I mean, put it this way, I can do my pours without looking.
Okay.
If I want to add extra, I can.
Okay.
But another one was, I had a lady once argue with me that she wanted a non-alcoholic martini. Think about that for a second.
What do you put in that?
That's the thing. First of all, your vermouth that you do your wash with has alcohol in it.
Yeah.
And on top of that, martini is gin or vodka.
Yeah.
I gave this bitch olives in a glass and said, here you go.
Yeah.
Like, that's when I realized, okay, my sarcasm is really coming into life.
Like, why are you at a bar?
Right.
Like, ordering anything but a Shirley Temple if you don't want to drink alcohol.
You know, I once actually I had a coworker ask me what goes in a virgin Shirley Temple.
That was honey.
That's a redundant phrase,
Shirley
sir,
Temple
ma'am.
Is the virgin.
No, I know.
It was funny. Last
thoughts
week.
And prayers to her.
Thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers.
Last week, I swear to God, who was it? Mike Strank. So I did the Mike Polk show last week. They did a dating game.
Yeah, I saw that ad.
It was amazing. It was so fun.
Yeah.
They did the one in the Winchester. They also did one at Hilarities.
Oh, did they?
And so I went and I was a contestant on the dating show. But Mike Strank, so I don't know if you know Leah Massari. She's like a bartender at Winchester and also at Hilarities. She's like an angel because she always like hooks us like the comics.
Wait, is she the one with the glasses?
She has glasses, long dark hair.
Okay, she's pissed at me.
Oh, no.
We'll
talk about that later. She's an angel to me. But it was funny because she comes in and we have ordered like all these different alcoholic beverages. And she's like, she goes up to Mike and she's like, and here's your shot of grenadine. And he was like, yay. Like, does this fucking shot of grenadine. And I was like, wait. I'm like raising my hand. I'm like, is there even alcohol in that? She's like, no, it's just going to turn his face pink. Oh, like, God. He just had like a pink mouth and pink teeth. Because Mike Strank's a comedian and he's like very committed to like the bit. And he's like one of those guys, like, I don't know if you know.
He's
Jimmy
a method
Graham.
Actor.
Yeah, he's very committed to like everything he does. And he's fucking hysterical. But she's like, here's your shot of grenadine. And it was like in one of those like double shot glasses.
Mm. Oh, boy.
And he fawned, just was like, grenadine. And we were just like laughing at him because it was God. And I was like, wait, what is grenadine? And I think Brian Kenny was like, I think it's just maraschino cherry juice. Like,
it's
pretty
just
much.
Maraschino cherry syrup.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah. It's like, I was like, it's just pink and
it's
sugar,
just
right?
Sugar.
Like, that's all. I mean,
it's delicious, but come on.
Yeah, we're not hating on it, but itself.
Yeah. Like, I hate
right.
No,
it just
Shirley
seems
Temple
like a little.
Just imagine swallowing syrup.
Right.
That's... Yeah, no, I'm not. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I like pancakes and French toast,
pan
and I will
clocks.
Like drown that. Wait, what are we talking about? Oh, is that a Mar?
Do you call them pan clocks?
Pan clocks. It was a 51st States reference.
Is that what it is? Because I call them pan clocks.
No, I don't. Pan Clark. Pan clock.
Oh, pan clock.
I love that movie, actually. I own the soundtrack.
Call them pan clocks.
I love everything about that movie.
I don't know where that's from.
I find myself singing Forgetful Lucy all the time, but to my cats.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, Forgetful Chloe. It's kind of snowy.
Oh,
oh my God.
I know. This is what I do. I literally make up. That's my life is like 50% making up parody songs
that's
to my cat.
That's very true. I've witnessed it firsthand.
25% doing my actual job that pays the bills. 25% miscellaneous comedy related things. So did you first notice like, oh, I'm a sarcastic bitch when you were being a bartender or.
That's kind of when it came to fruition fully.
Okay.
Because I like to fuck with people.
Okay.
And if you're being dumb, like I will.
How was that received?
It depends on the person. I have many people who don't like me because they don't get my sense of humor.
Okay.
I have more people though who like me because they know that I'm not afraid to say shit.
Mm.
And they respect me for that, which I totally get. And they're my people is because they realize like I'm not serious 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you just have to ask the person.
Okay.
I actually had a guy, Pride this past year had a, Cleveland Pride sucks. I don't know if anyone's
We went to
gone.
Cleveland Pride. Yeah.
Yeah, we went.
Cleveland Pride's budget is terrible compared to other prides. Like
the
budget,
Pride
sense,
I'm sure.
Their budget is like half a Band-Aid in a rock.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing there.
Yeah.
And so they were pulling in Taylor Dane as the headliner.
We saw Taylor Dane. We went.
I didn't get to see.
Oh, you left because you were sick. Or what were you just not feeling?
Yeah,
well?
I don't remember what happened.
So we got there because the whole reason we were like, fucking Taylor Dane. And I did like her makeup. I did rainbow eyeliner.
And I like don't wear makeup. So
rainbow.
I was walking around just going like this.
And then like the top half of my hair was bleached. So I just took, I have 8 dozen colors of Manic Panic underneath my bathroom sink. And I just like put them all in my hair and did like rainbow streaks. And then my friend BJ, shout out BJ Calangelo. She's like the introduction lady on our podcast. Who's also done a podcast episode.
BJ.
BJ was like, we're going to fucking see Taylor Dane. So we got like right up front and we were so amped about it. I love Taylor
Dane. So here's the thing. I didn't know who Taylor Dane was.
Because you're little and
but
a baby.
No. But don't know because I'm really good on like 60s, 70s, 80s. Pop culture until I heard the song. I'm like, oh, tell it to my heart. This is okay.
Yeah, and love will lead you back.
So, sure.
Yeah. Love will lead you back.
So no. So I was like, who the fuck is Taylor Dane? And one of the things that, again, I have no issue doing this. I know Kesha's brother. So I know, like, I had, like, an in, and I tried to contact Pride. And I'm like, hey, let's pull Kesha in. They didn't want to do it. I'm like, you guys are fucking ridiculous. Yada, yada, yada. So a buddy on
Facebook. Isn't Kesha a gay icon, sort of? Like, yeah. She's yeah. very, yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, again, Cleveland Pride being Cleveland Pride. Taylor Dane comes in, and a buddy on Facebook was like, I can't wait for this person, yada, yada. And I fucked with him. I'm like, man, if you're this excited for Taylor Dane, I can't wait to see what your reaction is when you actually when there's actually someone relevant coming. And he messaged me. He's like, I just don't like you. Like, it's not going to work. Like, I'm going to just unfriend you. Like, I'm going to let you know that I don't like you. I'm like,
he's
dude.
Really dedicated to right. Taylor Dane.
I'm like, dude, like, relax. Like, I wasn't. Whatever.
Who notifies
no,
someone?
No, so here's my thing. I grew up in the sticks, and so, mm-hmm. like, we had a lot of, like, 80s, 90s contemporary pop. So I actually grew up on Taylor Dane, and then Tig Notaro is, like, one of
yes,
my, like,
that's what I was gonna
idols.
Say.
Yeah.
And she has an amazing fucking bit
oh my God.
On Taylor
it's
Dane.
It's the best sketch
just
ever.
Just literally go on YouTube and type in Tig Notaro, Taylor Dane. Because the thing is, it's actually a part of, so my favorite podcast, other than my own, is the This American Life podcast. Uh-huh. And it was actually a part of like a showcase they were doing.
It's brilliant.
Where she went on and told the story about how, and I'm just going to try to summarize it as best I can without ruining it. She lived in LA, and no matter where she fucking went, Taylor Dane was always fucking there. And every time she'd see Taylor Dane, she'd be like, I love you. I think you're great. And Taylor Dane would react so weirdly. Like, she didn't know how to handle
like
her
didn't know
each
who Taylor,
time.
Like, Taylor Dane didn't know who she was?
Well, Taylor Dane didn't know who she was. But she would be like, every time she'd see her, she'd be like, well, I have to go say something to her. And she'd go up to her and be like.
And say the same thing every time.
Hey, I love your music. Or I should say, I love your voice.
Yeah, yeah. Every
and
time
each time she'd say something wacky in response. Like
Taylor Dane did not know
my
how
speaking
to,
voice.
Yeah, like just like weird responses. And she's like, yes, I overheard you talking to the guys at the table next to us.
And it got to a point where, like, literally her friends, it was like this ongoing like thing that they'd
inside
make fun
joke,
of Tig with.
Yeah.
Like, everywhere they'd go, they'd see Taylor Dane and they'd look at Tig and go, please don't do this. And she'd go, you know I have to do this.
Every time.
And then she'd say, excuse me.
Sorry to bother you.
I just wanted to say, I love your voice.
And then
it was fantastic.
Thanks.
Yeah, like it took her like five tries before Taylor Dane finally just thanked her for saying a nice thing. Because every other time she'd give her such a weird ass response.
It's amazing.
Actually,
though.
I have a Taylor Dane-esque story
Yay!
Like that, but it's myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So my signature joke is about fisting. I pull someone in from, and this is why the bartender chick hates me, because I pulled her in at Hilarities and
oh,
she was
Leah.
She wasn't a fan of that. So I pull someone in from the audience. It sounds like I pull someone in for fisting, but it's not, I promise. and to deliver this joke.
Okay. So and, like you like took I'll, someone as like
yes,
a subject of your.
No. Like I'll go up to someone and bring the microphone up to them and be like, we're going to do this together.
Oh, okay.
Round two. There it is. Woo-hoo! And,
I felt just sidebar. I felt really bad for your friend because she was like, "I'm gonna go into the other room to open my can," and no, I was like, "I really wanted to be like, no, you don't have to do that," because we're just like,
meanwhile,
she's so polite and so like considerate. I was like, I felt bad, but you were talking and interrupt. So
no, it's good.
Everyone make all the noise you want to make. It's totally fine.
So one of the things that you'll always find with comedians, especially when you go to the show and you're local comedian, is that we all have the same jokes that we work on over and over again.
And you hear them
right.
over and over.
Like, I'm pretty sure at this point, Jess could do my set. I could do Jess's set, yep. et cetera, et cetera. So I did this show. It was actually Hilario Barrio like last summer. And I did my fisting joke. And about a month later, I was in Cam's Corner. I was going up to the Walgreens there. The store was fucking packed. And I turn around and this dude goes, you're the fisting guy.
What? I want to be known as the fisting guy.
It's like everyone just turned around. And I'm like,
it was like, oh shit.
I looked at him dead in the eye and I'm like, you know it. But it's so funny. Like my legacy has come down to fisting. But you have to. That's the thing. You have to be on your.
Oh, you're okay.
Oh, okay. That was the chair. That was the chair, I promise. Thank you, Natalie. I was going to move it and just like.
No, I actually thought it was the floor. I wasn't sure like if there was a loose board. I was like, oh no.
I'm falling through.
The floor is.
I Taylor Dane to myself. But
wow.
Like, I know I have what I call like, I steal it from Bianca Del Rio. I have what I call a Rolodex of hate in my head. Where if someone says something, it's just like, okay, there it is. And I say it. So I play with it. I don't give a fuck.
That's great. What's funny is I was going to say I've yet to be recognized for anything that I've done. But what was weird is that, so I was telling you, the first time I ever did comedy was at the showcase workshop thing at the Improv. Mm-hmm. And literally the next fucking week, we're in Tremont. They have Art Walk. I think it's like the first Friday of every month. Mm-hmm. We're walking down the street and this girl. Now, granted, at the time, I had like titty length blue hair. So it was like real standout. But she like grabs me and she's like, did you perform at the Improv the other night? And I was like, I did. And she was like, you were really funny. And I'm like, holy fucking shit. I've only been doing this 6 days, but I'm already being recognized. That is a bad precedent to set for your comedy career. Like, oh, this is just how it's going to be from now on. Like, everyone will laugh at you and recognize you on every street corner.
They're all going to laugh at you.
Yeah. Like,
they're all going to laugh at you.
That's amazing. Oh, God.
I feel so
Carrie,
old
shout out.
Oh, yeah. It's been so long since I've seen that, actually.
Man, what was the other flavor you got?
Oh, black cherry. You want me to go get another one?
Yes, right, let's do it. Right.
Yeah, these are talk amongst pretty stuff. Amazing.
Yeah,
I don't get, I get recognized every day, but not for comedy. It's just
your
because, yeah, well, that, and ever since, like, I graduated college, I went to CSU, and I was like, I don't really want an actual adult career yet. I'm kind of exhausted.
Does any of us?
Exactly. But, so I started, at Starbucks in my building as a barista. Mm-hmm. I've been in the same building ever since. This is my fourth job I've had in my building, downtown Cleveland.
Oh, nice.
So my nickname is the mayor of 200 Public Square.
I was going to say, where do you live? Like the Bingham? That like your building?
No, oh, but I do.
No,
wait, you live at the Bingham?
I live in the Water Street, which
is my work. Oh, okay. It's my work
Hi,
building.
Stalkers. Now you can find me.
I have friends who live in the Bingham, so I'm like, they probably have seen you.
No, yeah, it's my work building. I've had four, this is my fourth job I've had in the same building since college. So like literally walking through the building, it's like a weird movie. I'm just like,
it's good, right?
Hey, good morning. Hello. Hey, Joe. Hey, Bob. Hey, like, hey, what's going on?
Wink and gun.
And they're just like, hey, Hannah. Hey, hey, how's it going? Oh my God. Hey. And like someone from my current job was walking like with me. We both were just like randomly walking to the cafeteria at the same time. Mm-hmm. And she witnessed it. And it was one of those days where it was like, very like over the top, like 10 people from one elevator to another said hi and recognized me and like weren't even together or anything.
I'd be like, bitch, high five again.
She was looking at me like, are you a Kardashian? Like she was so confused. And I was like, I'm I don't know, but I'm one of them.
I got blocked.
Kiki Kardashian.
I'm Kiki.
I got blocked from Kim Kardashian's Twitter.
No! What did you do? How do you get blocked from her? Because she's probably got trolls like 24/7.
I tweeted one thing to her and I got blocked. Because one day I was feeling really bitter about life. And this was recent too, probably in the last 2 months.
Patty White.
And I tweeted to Ryan Seacrest and Kim Kardashian this thing. I said, do you know how many dicks I've sucked in my life and how many I've done it on video? Where's my fucking TV show, Kim Kardashian and Ryan Seacrest?
That's not even that mean.
I was bitter. And she fucking blocked me.
That's not even anything crazy over the internet.
What I'm saying.
That's accurate.
That's weird.
How does she have the time? We were talking about this on the way over tonight. Like, we were talking about how, like, petty people can be and just, like, the negativity. And I know this all sounds cliche and blah, blah, blah. But, like, we're, Gigi and I, are at a point in our lives where, like, we just don't fucking have time. Yeah. Like, and I'm at the age where I don't have the energy. Like, I barely have the energy to give a shit about things I should give a shit about.
Yep.
So I don't have the energy to be like, I'm gonna have a vendetta against you and I'm gonna block. Like, it's just so hard
yeah,
to
that
keep
seems
up
really
with.
Strange.
That was petty.
Yeah.
That bitch was so petty you could call her Tom.
Wait. my favorite insults are Petty White and Estelle Petty. Because I love Golden Girls. And also, I liked another one that's a favorite of mine is Rude McClanahan. That's what I also like to call people. Like, when they're being rude is Rude McClanahan.
I'll just call him B. Arthur.
B. Arthur. She's my favorite one. Whenever I would take the Witch Golden Girls quiz, I was always B. Arthur. Like, every
I'm like
time.
A cross between Blanche and Sophia. Sophia because the sarcastic ass.
And
Blanche because I'm a hoe.
Slutty, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
But she had like a fucking, she had like some kind of like, she had a lot of fucking charisma too though. Like she, my favorite, okay, so my boyfriend and I were talking, my boyfriend's like a monster person. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have met yet. He's like nearly 7 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
I am not. I am like 5'7". It is very hard for us to do most sex because he is so tall.
Most sex.
Because, and so we, like most sex is very hard because he's so tall. And so we were talking about getting a sex swing, and then I started talking.
Sex swings are so much fun.
See, I've never done it, but like we're talking about getting one. And then I keep thinking about the episode. There's an episode where Blanche takes this dude to like this like, it was like a luau cabin or whatever. Yes. And all of a sudden the sex swing just drops out of the ceiling. Yes. And the guy's like freaking the fuck out. And then I'm thinking about it. I'm like, Jesus Christ, it was 1987 that this episode aired. And yeah. There's so fucking progressive. Sex swings and all this shit. Oh my God.
They touched a lot on Golden Girls. They did. For being with the, like, the timeline it came out in.
It aged really well. Because that was the thing. It was on Hallmark Channel like every night. And I'd fall asleep insane. To it for the longest time. But I would watch it on Hallmark Channel. And it was like, Jesus, like most sitcoms, like even like early to mid 90s sitcoms did not age. Like they're so sappy, so terrible. And this was like 83 to 93 and it ages so well. Like it's not corny. Well, there are some really corny cheesy shit, but like it, there's still shit. Like Mitch Hurwitz writes for Arrested Development. He wrote for Mark Cherry. He wrote for Desperate Housewives. He wrote for Golden Girls, all that shit. So
I swear Golden Girls and Roseanne are the two shows that are definitely you can watch over and over and over again. And you laugh at the same exact shit.
Yeah.
And
I love
that is
Roseanne.
The testament to beautiful, perfect comedy writing.
That's how I am with the first. So not the first, but I would say seasons 3 through 10 of The Simpsons. Like because Conan O'Brien and all the office writers like Greg Daniels and
The Office.
Danny Chun. Like, all those guys wrote for The Simpsons those first 10 years. And so that's why I have, like, Simpsons shit tattooed on me. Because,
I've never
like,
seen a full episode of The
okay,
Simpsons.
Okay, so this is, like, your Matilda. Like, I am, like, fucking... Okay. Like, I literally... This is a Simpsons reference tattooed on me right now. Like, have you ever seen the opening credits when, like, the green...
Oh, the
bar
green little
drops
crystal
behind,
thing.
Drops
yeah.
behind his back. Yeah. That's what that is. Hmm. And I got it on my left wrist because it's, like... It's why I became a comedy writer is The Simpsons. Like, that's why I'm obsessed with it. But that's it. Like, I have all Simpsons seasons 3 through 10... Not just on DVD, but also Amazon. Uh-huh. I have them all memorized, like backwards and forwards. And the thing is, I don't care how much I have it memorized. Every single fucking time that joke or that thing happens, I'm like, what? Every time.
That's how I am with the Golden Girls.
And that's what I appreciate about good. That's what you, it doesn't, it ages well every single time.
Completely.
Did you have any like inspirations for sort of like comedy or sarcasm or both or?
Yeah. Lenny Bruce was a huge inspiration.
Did you watch Mrs. Maisel?
I haven't watched Mrs. Maisel.
So
you
there's a guy that portrays Lenny Bruce on Mrs. Maisel. You got
to
watch
Well,
listen to your
Lenny,
girl.
Have you seen the movie Lenny that where Dustin Hoffman plays Lenny Bruce?
All right,
Bruce?
Well, I'm going to make a note of that as well.
It's a great... Bob Fosse, who directed Cabaret and all that jazz, directed this movie. It's a great, great film from 1974.
Okay.
I like the brashness of what Lenny Bruce stood for, but also Don Rickles. I'm a huge fan of Don Rickles. And again, so that's kind of where I don't give a fuck saying like... I don't give a fuck... calling people out by name. I don't give a fuck with criticism because they didn't give a fuck. And a lot of my comedy drew from that. A big person who I was super honored with was Margaret Cho.
She's great.
Yeah. Which, by the way, and this was the thing, in my first year here in Cleveland, Margaret Cho follows me on Twitter. Why? I don't know.
That's so great.
Yeah. And
okay,
she,
so I'm sorry. That Trump's Mara Wilson liking one of my tweets. That's pretty funny.
Well,
what's Twitter?
Rosie O'Donnell.
I don't even have a Twitter.
That's what I mean. Like, what's Twitter?
Yeah, I've heard Rosie O'Donnell. Like, it's so random, the celebrities that I have that follow me on Twitter. Facebook is one thing because Facebook is something like you kind of know the person the way Twitter's just like, whatever.
Yeah.
But I had done my show at Hollywood Barrio and I uploaded a piece of it to Twitter, and I got I had no idea how they got my email. I got an email from Margaret Cho's people saying, hey, she's going on tour this fall. Do you want to open up for her?
What?
Yes. I was super – in my first year in comedy, I was like, God, I'm doing something right then.
Yeah.
And I had to do this thing. I had to, like, go back and forth, and we did all this stuff. And it got to the point where literally they were like, okay, we chose someone else, but we know who you are.
Have you on the radar.
We'll have you on the radar, which I was super honored for. So Margaret Cho, even before that, was like a super big inspiration because here you had, I mean, think about it. What other Asian female comics do you know of right offhand?
Right.
Can you name them? You can't.
Ali
Wong.
Ali Wong. Yeah.
My bad.
And Helen Hong. She's the other one.
The pregnant one. Yeah, on Netflix, which is fantastic.
Baby Cobra.
Baby Cobra is one of my favorite things in the world. And so
but there's very few, you're right.
Yeah, there's very few.
And a part of Nancherla, if you think like Indian as also a part of like Asia, but
anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. They're so limited. And so being a gay guy who's a comic, I hate the term gay comic because I hate the label of it.
Yeah.
Like I'm a comic who
just
happens
to be gay. You don't want to get pigeonholed.
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm like, okay, outside of Kate McKinnon, Wanda Sykes, and Ellen
other
DeGeneres.
Gay comedians, yeah.
What other gay comedians can you name?
Tig Notaro.
Okay.
Jane Lynch.
Okay, but who aren't A-list.
Okay.
But, okay, like, so for an example, do you know...
Kathy Griffin's on the D-list.
Kathy Griffin's on the... So you know how there's, like, A-list comics like that, and then you look at, like, I don't want to say they're not A-list because they work so hard, but someone like Samore, who is a great black female comedian.
Okay.
She's been around forever. She's not super, super known, but you know of her.
Mm.
Outside
Dwayne
of the
Duke. I'm just naming Dwayne local Duke. Gay comics
outside,
that I love.
Yeah. Outside of, like, the quote-unquote A-list, you can't name any. And name
me, I'm bisexual, yay!
Name me a gay comic who is a guy.
Oh, it was a guy. No, that's a great point. I was going to say, like, bisexual. Is that Jeremy at the door? Yep, that's
perfect. Oh, more people.
Yeah, you want to let him in? Thank you.
So it's like, I was pigeonholed in a way. And so the whole Margaret Cho thing, while it was great, I was like, okay, do I want to be the gay comic?
Right. And you don't, know what I mean? and that's the thing I think a female comic struggle with a lot is they don't want to become pigeonholed as like female comedians because
right.
we're really fighting against that.
Yeah.
And so when we start doing the like all female comedy lineup or like the all female this, then you're just really sort of digging into like that.
Completely.
Yeah.
Completely. I mean, here in Cleveland, there's what? There's me, there's Dwayne, and there's Riley.
Mm-hmm.
Outside
that I can
of
think
the,
of off the top of my head.
On the guys.
Yeah,
on the guys
yeah.
list.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, where do we go from there?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we're gay. Yeah, we're comics. But do we have to be the gay comics?
It's funny that you mention this just because Josh Morrow dropped it in like the back of my head earlier this week that Touch doesn't have anything stand-up related. I don't know if they've
the
ever
Supper
tried
Club
to do.
No,
I'm sorry. Not Touch. Twist. Twist in Lakewood.
Oh, so I used to bartend for Twist.
Okay.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And I tried. It was actually this past summer that I worked for them. And
yeah.
I tried to get a comedy thing going. It's just not... It's not that they're against it. It's just not what they are looking for.
I feel
for.
Like it would be the right crowd. Like you wouldn't.
It depends.
I don't know.
It definitely depends. I know, like, depending on the material for sure.
Jeremy's shaking his head.
Depending.
Have they?
Oh,
okay,
have
so
they?
See, Jeremy's my historian, so we're gonna talk more about this.
Yeah,
later.
I think That's it's like a combination of like the age demographic, and then. Mm. I don't know. Like, I love going to Twist, but I can't picture comedy.
Here's
being
the thing. Here's the thing
there.
With working there is that. The people who come to Twist, they're awesome. They're super gay, and then there's your straights. But the gays are very sexualized. They're very sexual people,
mm-hmm.
and like their type of comedy is that, like, for example, that fisting joke that I have.
Yeah,
like, that would work there perfectly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you were to go up there and be like, "Well, this happened at me at work today," it would go over
it
their
head. It has to be very specific.
It has to be
being
very specific,
gay.
Very sexual. Yeah, very gay.
Because I mean, like, Jeremy and Dwayne had me do a showcase. Pride weekend
mm-hmm.
at Brothers
mm-hmm.
and a lot of my material was not, I mean, really didn't have anything to do about like my sexual identity
yeah.
and it still seemed to land pretty well, but it was about sex and I still
yeah.
think it landed
yeah.
relatively well.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess it probably depends on.
I'd
yeah.
love to do one in Twist, but yeah, I brought that up to them. I was like, hey, by the way, I do comedy. Let's start a night. They're just like, we're going to pass.
I mean,
yeah.
I would be like a go-go dancer at Twist, but I would probably wouldn't try a comedy at Twist.
Oh, they don't do that.
I know.
They
more.
Do that.
Yeah. I know they don't.
Yeah.
Joey,
it's unfortunate.
You had an untitled pilot project you wanted to talk about?
Yes. So the reason I am, Natalie was a part of one of the, three,
yay!
There it is.
Number
sorry.
Three.
Was a part of the project I was doing. So yeah, I'm taking a step back from comedy for a little bit. My last show was actually supposed to be this past Monday for Hilario Barrio. So I feel like I have to do one more show, but
okay.
I had to like cancel that one. Yeah, I met with the Cleveland Film Commission and pitched them this pilot and was like, let's do it here. Originally, it was going to be a group of millennials revolved around the RNC and the backdrop of, you know, all that shit that happened here. And then what led into the Trump administration. It would be a very non-biased look so people of right wing and left wing could have say. And, you know, they were like, okay, let's see what you got. So 7 months go by. I do a short film, presented it to them like 2 months ago. And they're like, okay, this is amazing. You have something here. Let's figure something out. So we ended up, we dropped the political aspect. So wrote a completely new story.
Interesting.
Set it outside of Cleveland. The whole reason why I went to the Cleveland Film Commission, I was like, let me use Cleveland talent. Let me use, you know, and plus the film commission's like, oh, we can make money off of this if this is filmed here. They're the ones who's like, no, take it out of Cleveland. Let's not do political. We change it up completely. And we go to pitch to HBO here in like a couple months.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, like if HBO passes, then we go to Netflix and we go to the next person, yada, yada, yada. But it's super exciting because I've worked 10 years to get a foot in the door and now I have it. And awesome. Mama needs that TV money.
Yeah. We all do.
It's fantastic. So I'm hoping something comes from it.
Do you have anything else as far as social media or anything you want
to? I'm on Facebook, Joey Gentile. I'm on Twitter, Joey Gentile 1992. There are two Joey Gentiles. The other one is also gay.
Bastards.
But he is no longer as fun as I am.
Alter ego.
He's no longer
as no.
It's kind of like Gentile.
Him and I are actually in a Twitter war right now, which is hilarious because I am trying to get verified and he's also trying to get verified. But he is actually Joey Gentile. If you look him up on YouTube, he's a YouTube person. I don't want to say star because fuck him. But he's a person. No, yeah, he's a YouTube person. So him and I have been on a war with Twitter itself because I'm like, bitch, here's my IMDb. This is my SAG card. Like I am a comedian. What the fuck do you have?
Shit.
One of us is going to get verified here. And
we should just make Mara Wilson the judge and then she can just decide who gets to be.
I can't wait to watch Michelle with you. Bye.
Oh, shit. G, do you have a social media presence that you want people to know about?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at ggchick, g.g.chick.
I am at epicfaul, EPICFAUL, on Instagram and Twitter, although I'm only checking Twitter about once a week these days to maintain my own fucking sanity.
And I need to get one, apparently.
Yeah, get a fucking Twitter so that I can be like, I have one more follower.
I think I used to have one, and it was something like, really embarrassing.
I know,
I'm obsessed with Emily Blunt, and I think it was Hannah Blunt
something. Oh, no wonder the Cuba cheese thing went so well with you earlier. Quoted Devil Wears
exactly.
Prada.
Emily Blunt. You can also find me every Sunday at the Avenue Tap House at 7 p.m. Literally every Sunday until I'm probably dead. First Sunday of every month is a open mic, so feel free to swing by. And the last three Sundays of every month is a book showcase, so feel free to hit me up on aforementioned Instagram or Twitter. I want to thank OK Pants at OK Pants on all the social media for making our logo. Pete Milk for making us sound amazing. And Above Below Entertainment and Lousy Weather Media for being our network and president network. I don't even fucking know what this hierarchy shit is. we need a sound effect.
So this is my thought. Uh-huh. Either whatever the hell this is, the movie horn.
Yes, I am.
Or in spirit of Mean Girls, we could at the same time just say.
She doesn't even show here.
Oh my God!
That's it.
Are you kidding me?
That's it right there. That's already been decided.
Oh, God. I kind of want to end on that.
You
one
are
news.
So
like
blushing.
So,
I'm shutting this phone down because Mama just fell in love. No kidding.
She doesn't even go here.
She doesn't even go here.
We're doing it on three. All right. One, two, three.
She doesn't even go here.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye.